You know, we saw that. That's what we've been talking about over the last few weeks. We're talking about filling it in here. We've been taking a look at this crazy dream that God has for this community. And really what it is it's this crazy love that God has for people all over this area. And it's really about here. How are our hearts aligning ourselves with what God is doing in our community? And so I want to take a look at that today. We're in week four of the crazy journey. And as we're approaching this first anniversary, you know, over the last three weeks, we've been looking at the heart side of this. What is God doing in our hearts? How is God arranging our hearts? How is God growing our hearts? How is God taking this community to new places as he prepares us to take this next big step? And last week, if you missed last weekend, we gave a financial update on the Crazy campaign. We gave a strategic team update on the Crazy journey in terms of how our strategic team is seeking and aggressively pursuing zoning in on our next location. And exciting things happening there. You know, the big thing is that there's bigger plans than we ever had imagined when we started this whole deal. And if you missed last week, you can go back to iTunes or to our podcast page, and you can download that. And I encourage you to do that so you can be kind of caught up to speed on where God's taking this community as we continue through this journey here. And you know, the reality is one of the things that fuels this is capital. I mean, one of the things that fuels dreams that God has for communities and God's initiatives in the world is money. And it's people like you and me. And I want to talk about that today. It's people, you know, saying, hey, I'm going to rearrange my life. I'm going to invest in what makes God's heartbeat. And, you know, sometimes we think we walk into a place like this and we're like, there's fat cats around here. There's somebody with $1 million. It's just supporting this thing. No, this is supported by ordinary people like you and me. And it's people that have just said, hey, I believe in what God is doing here and I want to move this thing forward. And so one of my goals throughout this mini journey is one, to encourage those of you who have made crazy campaign commitments a year ago. You're nearing the end of year one. I want you to continue to see how God is shaping and forming not only where we're going on this journey, but what God's doing in the lives of people, in your life even, as you've committed to this thing. For those of you who are newer to the Crosspoint community, maybe you joined us since we completed the Crazy campaign a year ago. You know, we created this place specifically with you in mind. I mean, we created a place where we said, you know, we want to have a place we can take our friends. We can invite people that maybe aren't into the normal mode of church, that need some new pathways for experiencing God. And that's why this was created. And we want to invite you to be a part of this journey, to maybe get in still at the ground floor as we enter year number two. And one of my goals is to help you come to the place of deciding if you will or will not participate financially in fueling this thing that God is doing right here. And so in your weekly today, there's also a crazy journey commitment card that looks like this. And this is for those of you who are newer to the Crosspoint community. If you filled one of these out last year, you remember this thing very well. You held it in your hands a number of weeks. We asked you to pray over this thing. This is not for you. This is for those of you who have joined us who might say, you know, I'd like to get in on this thing. And all I would ask is that you would be open, that you would listen, that you would process, that you would pray. And then however God shapes and forms, you know, your role in this, that you just respond to whatever God calls you to do. That's what I'd ask. And so, you know, one of the things I want to be really clear about is you know, I'm not going to manipulate anyone. I never do, at least try to never do that. I've been accused of that at times, I guess. But, you know, what I do get is really passionate about what God is doing. Because this is God's dreams that we're pursuing right now. And as I said, they're shaping up bigger than what we ever anticipated. And the really cool thing about this is that it's way beyond the capital, it's way beyond the money. What it's really about is it's how God has been taking this community and he's been shaping and forming lives from within the community, how God continues to bring people to this community and changing the trajectory of lives that will change for eternity. And that's a really cool part of what's been going on around here. So I want to dive into this today and take a look at trust. Before we do that, let's pray. And I just ask God to meet us wherever we are. God, I'm praying right now that as we gather in this place, as we said, there could be a lot of other places we could be, and yet for some reason, we're here today. And we believe that when we engage in a place, in a community, in a service like this, that you meet us exactly where we are. It doesn't matter what spiritual orientation, what spiritual background we're from. We believe you just meet us right there. And so today, God, I would ask that you would help us to grow, help us to see you clearly, help us to see what it means to trust you more in our lives, in our financial lives, in every aspect of our being. And God, I would ask that you would help me to be articulate and most importantly, accurate today. Pray these things according to your name and character. Amen. So a few years ago, Newsweek ran this article called A Millionaire Moment. And it was kind of fascinating. In fact, here's a snippet from the article right here. It says, here's a get-rich-quick tip. If you want to become a millionaire, perhaps you should consider writing a book about millionaires. Did you know it was that easy? I mean, all you have to do is write a book about millionaires, you become a millionaire. All right, he said, after all, millionaire mania has become the Harry Potter of personal finance publishing. Publishers are finding any excuse to put millionaire in titles these days. And then it goes on to list all these books on Amazon.com, online and bookstores that all have millionaire and things like, you know, how to become a 401k millionaire. You didn't think you could be a millionaire? Just work it through your 401k. Another book, 365 Ways to Become a Millionaire Without Actually Being One. Who thought you could do that? You don't have to be a millionaire to be one. Crazy, you know, the idea was, you know, there's this fascination, there's this obsession, in a sense, in our country with being a millionaire. Why the obsession with being a millionaire? Well, in the same article, Paul Skirvish, a professor at Boston College, he actually said this. He said, these books that are coming out are real modern religious manuals. He said, they're telling us how to be virtuous. Because you see, America is a very religious nation. I mean, we're very religious in every aspect of our being, and our number one religion, our number one God in our religious nation is the God of money. I mean, you talk about being a millionaire, and everybody's like, I want to worship that God. I want to enter that religion. I mean, this is why there's an obsession with becoming a millionaire. And so the reality is whatever it is you trust in, and in this case being money, you know, we see money as a God. We see money as this thing that gives us value, that gives us worth, and it often becomes the God of our religion. Whatever you trust in is what becomes your God. In fact, there's three statements. I want you to fill the blank in on these for yourself real quick. Just do a little self-analysis, create a little self-awareness. You might write these down in your weekly. Grab your pen and write these down. How would you fill this blank in? Blank makes us feel loved. How would you answer that? What is it that makes you feel loved in your life? Is it having a lot of stuff around you? Is it knowing you have a steady paycheck coming in? Is it having a certain number of kids in your family? You know, blank makes me feel loved. Second fill in the blank. Blank makes us feel important. How would you fill that blank in? What makes you feel important? What are the things, if you're being really real, you're not going to turn this in, so just do some real honest self-awareness right here. Say, what actually makes me feel important? What are the things that I fill that blank in with? What's the God that makes me feel important? Third question, or third fill in the blank. What blank makes us feel secure? Now, where do you get your security come from? Is it a certain amount on your 401k? Is it a certain salary? Is it a certain house in a certain neighborhood? And then I feel secure because I'm not living in, you know, my neighborhood is affectionately become known as the slum of Fishers, I guess. I don't know. I didn't know Fishers had slums. That's what my neighbors tell me. But, you know, what is it? When I get to a certain neighborhood, well, then I feel secure. You know, what is it? You know, what are the things we trust in? You know, whatever God we put in these blanks, and that's what they are, these are the things that make us feel loved. These are things that make us feel important. These are the things that make us feel secure. And so today, I want us to take a look at what we trust in. And when we talk about this, you know, I'm going to be talking specifically about money. Jesus was very clear about how money is a huge barometer, how money is a huge gauge of where we're trusting and how we're trusting. In fact, he said, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. And so in essence, what he was saying is your heart is a great indicator of where you're putting your treasure and vice versa. Where you put your treasure indicates to me where your heart really is. And so as we look at this, you know, it's one of those struggles. And for many of us, we've been trusting God in increased ways over the last year. Many of us that made crazy campaign commitments a year ago, God has been stretching you. God has been growing you. And here's the good news. God never stops growing and stretching. You will continue to be stretched and grown. You might say, man, I've had enough. I feel like God's, you know, grown me in my trust. And yet God will continue to do that your entire life. And so there's three questions I want us to look at today, three competing questions that help us evaluate what we're trusting in. And they really evaluate, they're really three competing questions when it comes to giving, when it comes to how do we manage what we have? Because this gets to the core of what we trust in. The first is this, what can I afford? You know, what can I afford? Interesting question. You know, you might say, well, what can I afford? How much can I invest in what God is doing? Well, there's some interesting statistics. In fact, about 15 years ago, these statistics came out that giving was actually lower in 1997 per capita than in 1921 or 1933 during the depth of the Great Depression. Now, that's interesting because I actually pulled the statistics from before September 11th, 2011, because apparently we were in more of an economic boom then. And so even then, giving in proportion to income was significantly lower than it was during the Great Depression. Get this. One out of every six born-again Christians gave no money to a church at all in the last year. And then also, only 9% of born-again Christians tithe their income to churches, which means only 9% of people who say, yeah, God has rescued me, I'm born again, I'm saved, whatever phrase you would use there. For some reason, there's this idea of, yeah, I want to go and be a consumer, but God has entrusted me with everything I have, and yet only 9% have actually tithed. They're given a 10% in return back to God to fuel the work that God is doing to allow this to happen in other people's lives. Why is this? Why is this? It's interesting. Here's why I think it is. Because that's all that we can afford. That's all that we can afford. And what we can afford is what we have left after we're done with ourselves. All right? That's an interesting idea, right? And so here's the idea. You know, usually what we can afford is what's left when we're done with ourselves, which means it's after I've got my next new house, after I've upgraded my cars, after I've gone from iPad 1 to iPad 2, after I've got my winter wardrobe replaced, and now I'm working on my summer wardrobe, and then I have to make sure I've got my fall wardrobe, after I make sure I get everything in my kids' college savings account, after, then, God, I'm going to give you whatever is left. And yet that's the way we often honor God. Now, the Bible's model for giving is interesting because it's different than this. You see, what we see in our culture is money is an interesting thing. Money is actually a god that's like an addictive drug. You know, it's this addictive thing. We say, man, when I get here, or I'm going to be satisfied when I take this next step, and then we get to that step, and then what do we find? It's that we're actually not satisfied, and so we have to get one more thing. In fact, every study that's been done, not only in the last 10 years, in the last century, has actually shown that the more income we make, the actual less we're willing to give away, not just to a church, but in general to nonprofits, to people to people that are doing something positive in the community. In fact, when you think about it, the statistics would say if you make an average of $2,000 a month, then if you were to give a tithe off of that, a 10% of that income, that would be $200 a month. And you might say, man, that's a lot of money if I've only got $2,000 a month. Well, if you were to get a promotion and your income bumped up to $20,000 a month, a tithe would be $2,000 a month, and you're actually less. There's less of an option that you're going to take that $2,000 and invest it because you're thinking, man, that's what I used to make. It's a lot of money. Our giving proportionately goes down the more that we make, and we live in a very affluent society, and so we have to ask ourselves, what? How do I give? Do I base it off of the question, how much can I afford? The Bible talks about giving out of our first fruits. In fact, the Bible gives a model for our giving. We see this in Proverbs chapter 3. And this is a writer of wisdom right here. And he says, you know, here's the model that you should use. If you want to be right side up in your finances, he says, do it this way. He says, honor the Lord with your wealth, the first fruits of all your crops, and then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine. And so we might be sitting there thinking, man, I would love for my vats to be overflowing. I'd love for my barns to be overflowing. How do I get there? Well, the writer of wisdom says it starts with beginning with your first fruits, with the first 10%. What the writer's saying is back in the day, when people went out into their fields, they'd harvest their grain, they'd harvest their pomegranates, they'd harvest their wool off their sheep, whatever it might be. And they would literally give the first and the best 10% over whatever they brought in, and they'd give that back to the furtherance of the kingdom or of the temple and the work in the community. And what this is basically saying is God wants your first. He wants your first 10%. He wants your best. God is not into leftovers. He doesn't like the residue. He doesn't like what's left after we've taken care of everything that's in our own lives. Now, this is an interesting idea because, you know, for many of us, I know for some of us, many of us are business owners, and I know for some of us, if we're a business owner, you might only pay yourself twice a year, right? I mean, you know, you settle up at like 6 months and you operate off your account and then you kind of set up and write yourself a paycheck. But every now and then I hear somebody say, you know, I'm going to wait till the end of the year to make a year-end contribution. Well, we're all about year-end contributions. We love year-end contributions. I make a year-end contribution, but here's the deal. If we're always waiting for the year-end contribution and say, I'm going to wait till the end of the year, what are we saying? We're saying, I'm gonna wait until I can see what I can afford after I've met all of my needs, and then at the end, if there's anything left, if there's any residue left in the bank account, I might say, God, here's what I got. God's saying, no, that's not the way to get your finances right. You see, I believe at the core of us, we want to be generous. But there's an order to this. If we want to be generous, then we have to stop asking the question, what can I afford? And we have to say, how am I going to follow the biblical model for how to steward what God has given me? Which always means beginning with giving God my first fruits. And let me just say, for those of you who have made crazy campaign commitments, and made 3-year commitments a year ago, many of you are on track and you're on a regular basis, you're making those investments. And let me just say, that is going a long ways to allowing our strategic team to continue to move forward into this next year. I mean, way to go, way to stay up with it. That's what's empowering our team to go forward aggressively. You know, you might be a little behind, or maybe you're a lot behind in your commitment. You know, all I'd want to say is just, you know, catch up as you can. And if you haven't started giving on your commitment yet, if you've not began yet, start whenever you can. Don't let it go too much further. And you might say, man, as I divide that out over 2 years, there's no way I can begin investing a 24th every month so I can get to the end. Well, we'll start with something. Start sooner. The longer you wait, the harder it's going to be to come close to fulfilling that commitment. And trust that God in some way is going to bless you for that. For those of us who have not made commitments, those of us who are maybe newer to this community, I just want to implore you, I want to say, you know, I'm just asking you to pray right now, to be open, to process, to listen. On our anniversary weekend, we're going to be asking, inviting you to have the opportunity to get in on the ground floor of this thing. Even, maybe you weren't with us last year when we went through this, but there's still time to say, I want to get in on this thing. I want to say I was a part of creating this new place to build into people. So the first question we have to wrestle with is, what can I afford? The second question is, what can I trust God for? Now, if you've been coming to Crosspoint for any time at all, for any period of time, you know that we are not interested solely in what's in your pocket. I mean, we're not interested in the money in your pocket. I mean, we are to some degree because we believe that's a reflection of how God is working in your lives. But that's not the core thing that Crosspoint is about. In fact, it's very rare for us to have a day like today, just this kind of hammer on how we get ourselves financially in a good position and invest in what God's doing. We've proven that. What we've also proven, whether you're into God or not, is that the principles in the Bible, they simply work. When we follow them, they simply work. And again, here's another scripture in Malachi chapter 3 that tells us, it says, this is how to get yourself right financially. In fact, here's what the prophet Malachi says. He says, bring the whole tithe, the whole 10%, into the storehouse so that there may be food in my house. And test me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, and see if I will not open up for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you a blessing until it overflows. Now, this is an interesting verse right here because this really smokes out the inner workings of the heart right here. This is really about, is your heart with God? Is your treasure with God, or is your treasure in your own pocketbook? I mean, it kind of smokes things out right here. It communicates once and for all, am I into the God of creation? Am I growing in my relationship with God, or am I growing in my relationship with the God of money? I mean, that's what this thing really gets at right here. And you know, and this is the only place in all of the scriptures that God says, test me. I mean, you'll find those words nowhere else in the Bible. He says, test me on this. He says, just try me. Just try me out on this. Try me for 3 months and see if in some way, when you begin to give the first 10% back, if I don't in some way open up the windows of heaven and they begin to flow your way. And this is not about prosperity giving. This is just a simple principle that God says, when you do this, when you invest, your needs will be met in unique ways. Francis Chan, in his book, Crazy Love, he said, if you really want to experience God's supernatural provision, then do as he says. Test him. Give him more than you can manage and just see how he responds. Just see how he responds. You know, there have been people doing this all around this place. There have been people over the last year that have rearranged their lives. They've put off buying cars for 3 years. They've put off home improvements for the next few years. Because they said, you know, these are things that we can do that maybe we've been saving for. But we talk about sacrifice. And sacrifice is saying, this is something I love, but there's something that I'm gonna forego that because there's something that I love more. And so over this last year, I've just been amazed. I've been blown away at some of the ways that people have arranged their lives to invest in this crazy, crazy dream that God has for this place to get into a more permanent location where we can continue to bless people. And in fact, I want you to hear from a couple of those individuals. I want Chris and Holly, if you guys want to come join me real quick here. And, you know, because these are cool stories, and these are ordinary, normal people. These aren't people, at least to my knowledge, that have like $500,000 sitting in their bank account, and they're like, oh, I'm going to skim a little off the top. Is that true? And I'm going to skim a little off the top, and y'all make that investment. These are people that are ordinary people, and Chris and Holly here, Chris and Holly have been partners around here since we began Crosspoint, and they serve in many ways behind the scenes. You see them in in some ways, you don't see them. Chris is often here loading in, getting this place set up before anybody arrives, serves on the screens in the back, making sure that I look good up here and have something to read off the screens. And Holly works out at Children's Check-In, and she often helps in the nursery when there's gaps. And these are people that are just partnering and blessing and investing, not only with their time, but with their finances in this place. And so a year ago, you guys went through this journey. And came to the end of that journey, and you had a conversation about what you were going to do. Kind of lay out for us how that kind of went and how you came to a place of deciding what your investment was going to be.
Well, I think as we talked about it and prayed about it together, I do finance for a living, so that background kind of took over, and we ran the numbers, and we figured out what we could do. You know, this is where this is going. This is what we've got left. This is what we can do. And then we prayed more about it. Talked to our LTE group about it, and we decided that was the safe thing to do. But this is not called the safe journey. This is a crazy journey. So we decided, you know, we've got to step out, and we've got to do something crazy, because that's what he's asking us to do. And so we stepped out beyond that.
Cool. And was that hard for you with a finance background to go against some of the things that you've been trained in, to always, you know, plan within what you believe you can do versus what God can do?
Well, yeah, if my balance sheet goes negative, that doesn't work.
It was
the very last week that you could pledge that we had finally decided, okay, we don't know how we're going to do this, but this is what we're supposed to do.
And, you know, one of the unique things is we always have excuses, right? I mean, I know you guys probably had some excuses as you went through this journey. Wow, I mean, we can't do this. We can't do what God's maybe calling us to do, because what if this happens? What if that happens? Every single one of us in this room, we have excuses that we could kind of lean on. You guys have big excuses. I mean, you guys both have medical conditions that are pretty big deals that could land you in the hospital for a period of time, that could sink you financially at any given moment, that could physically take you down in increased ways, have an impact on your marriage. How did that play into this commitment? Did it play into your commitment that you made?
It definitely did for me. I know I freaked out about it more than Chris did. You know, thinking of our medical conditions, I was worried that, you know, what if I go in the hospital, or what if, you know, something happens to Chris and I can't work or he can't work. And, you know, we've made this commitment to give this money that's over and above what, you know, is affordable. And so I was completely freaked out that something would happen. I'm like, I don't know about this. And, you know, and then we thought about it. And right after we got married, I ended up going in the hospital. And we got the bill in the mail. And Chris came home and he was like, if it's over $2,000, I may need to sit. And I said, well, you might want to lay down. So in short, we only had to pay $250 for a $30,000 bill for a hospital stay for me. And so thinking back to how God provided at that point in time, we kind of came to the conclusion that it doesn't matter if that happens. He's going to give us what we need. And so if we give what he asks for, then we'll be blessed in return.
And you guys are not new to this whole trusting deal. I mean, I know God's been growing you, and through this process, even over the last year, I mean, you've been growing in your trust and what you can expect of God. How have you seen God working that out? I mean, what are the tangible ways, even in the last year, that's begun to happen?
Well, you asked about the last year, and I can think even the last week, we had made our commitments based on what was there and then a stretch. Holly has changed jobs since. The income has gone down. She doesn't work as many hours. So that put another stretch to it. And then we decided it'd be a good time to buy a house, too, in the middle of this. So we're waiting on God's going to come through there. Just this week, Holly's had job offers for the summer, so she has that lined up. Like you'd said, we have the 13-year-old cars that we're waiting to replace, like you had mentioned originally. Mm-hmm. And this week, I had car problems. And I turned around, literally, no joke, and PJ, Angie, and Isaac were right there to help me with my car troubles. So he has already come through, even in the small ways.
So you didn't know he was a mechanic, too. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a cool thing. You know, and so before we wrap this up, why did you guys make this commitment? I mean, obviously, you've been here from the beginning, but that doesn't shoo you in. I mean, we didn't come to you and just say, hey, Chris and Holly, you know, what are you doing? We just ask you to do the same thing we're asking others to do right now. Pray, listen, process. At the end, respond. Why did you respond?
Well, with all of the blessings that God's given us in the midst of the trials and the easy things that we could have said, this could definitely sink us, we can't do it because of these reasons, we felt like we don't always give what we should as far as the blessings that he gives us, we don't always give back to him what we should or use them the way that he's asked us to. And so that was part of it, being able to give back the way that he's asking us to. And the other part is that Crosspoint is like a second home for us. When we're not here, we miss it. We miss the people. We miss being in connection with these people and with God. And, you know, if we're gone for a Sunday and we come back to our Life Together group, they're like, oh, you should have been there Sunday. It was great. And then we're like, man, you missed it. And
don't,
so
don't take a vacation often. It might not be good.
No, don't go anywhere. And so giving to Crosspoint, our second home, just makes us feel even better because we know it's fueling the community and it's making other people feel like Crosspoint is their second home too.
Yeah, awesome. Let's thank Chris and Holly for sharing. Thanks, guys. You know, the fascinating thing about this, I mean, here's the deal. Here's one of the things trust is right here. Trust is linked with the decision we make before we have all the answers. For many of us, we say, I have to have all the answers before I can actually make a decision. Well, trust is actually making that decision before I exactly know how it's all going to be worked out. Which leads us to the third question we have to wrestle with. This is the harder one. What are you doing right now that requires faith? Think about that for a moment. It gets real awkward all of a sudden. You might say, well, you know, I'm trusting God. I mean, Jesus is my Savior. He's rescued me. And yeah, you know, it's a really big deal that God has come and he lowered himself down and he rescues us, that he took on our stuff so that we didn't have to pay the price for all of our stuff. We could be restored in our relationship with God. But here's the deal. What are we doing after that? What are you doing in your life that actually requires you to need God in your life right now? You know, it's a fascinating thing because when we get to the core of that question, what we often find is that we in America, we live a very safe existence. We celebrate. We're like, man, I'm so thankful, God, for everything you've given me. But we often don't take the bold steps. We often don't take the steps that fall out of the realm of safety and say, God, man, if you don't show up right here, I'm going to be screwed. What are you doing right now that requires faith? You know, somebody asked me a couple weeks ago. I was having a lunch with one of our leaders around here, and they said, you know, they're asking about the crazy campaign, where we're going, you know, where some of our locations are, we're working on. And as I was sharing with them kind of the bigger thing that this was turning into and that it's getting specific and we're moving toward a land purchase instead of renting warehouse space, you know, they said, man, are you getting nervous about this? I mean, does this thing scare you? I mean, were you prepared for this? And I said, well, you know, I don't know that scared is the right word. I mean, I rarely am afraid. I don't know that being afraid is the right word, but what I am is I have great anticipation. And I thrive. I love living in that place where I don't know how God's going to work it out. I said, I don't know. There's questions that I can't answer right now. But what I do know is whenever I'm in the place where I can say, is this doable within the means that we have right now? And I can say no, then I know God is working and we're exactly where we need to be. And man, I get excited about that. I anticipate. My heart begins to beat fast about that. And so, you know, as I was thinking about that, I thought, you know, this is an interesting thing. When we trust is what happens when we come to that place of making decisions and we don't know how it's going to work out. And the only thing we can depend on is that God is going to somehow have to show up. In John chapter 6, we find a fascinating story about Jesus. And Jesus is out, he's teaching on the hillside, as he's often doing. And he's got about 5,000 men, it says, on the hillside, which they just counted men for some reason back then, women. Sorry, no offense, that's just the way it was. And it says 5,000 men, which means equates into probably 25,000 to 30,000 people when you take into account children and women. And so you have all these people on this hillside, and Jesus is teaching, and he's been teaching all day. I mean, people are, you know, he's the smartest man that ever lived. He's sitting there, and people are just taking this in. They're like, we've never heard the scriptures explained this way. It gets to the end of the day. Evening is approaching. Jesus turns to his 12 followers, his 12 closest friends, and he says, guys, these guys are famished. I'm famished. I need you to go find us some food. And they look and they're like, Jesus, what are we going to do? I mean, it would take over 8 months' wages for us to feed everybody here, and then that still probably wouldn't be enough. And you know, Jesus, he's like, I don't know. Just go find it. I mean, you know, when Jesus asks, you ever notice how we're often like questioning Jesus when he asks us to move? You know, and so you know, all of a sudden, Peter turns around, and he sees this boy carrying his lunch, and he has 5 loaves of barley bread and 2 fish. Here's what it says. It says, here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will that go among so many? Jesus said, have the people sit down. There was plenty of grass in the place. And the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Now you see right here, the disciples have a dilemma. They have a dilemma right here because, you know, they have to decide what they're going to do. Are they gonna take these 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish? And are they gonna say, man, God just provided lunch for us? Now I have a family of 6. That would barely be enough lunch for my family, all right? We just went through 2 fish this week in 1 dinner. All right, and so you know, the disciples have a dilemma. There's thousands of people. They're about to create a riot because they're angry and they're hungry. And all of a sudden, this little boy walks up and they have a decision to make. Are we going to use what God has brought our way? And are we going to trust in some unique way God's going to use this to meet the need right here? Or are we going to keep it for ourselves? You see, I think so many times, one of the reasons that God, we rarely see God move in crazy ways is because we don't actually let God move. We don't actually open it up to allow God to take whatever is there and to take it to new places. And so imagine what would have happened right here if the disciples would have just said, ah, man, there's no way this is going to work. How about we just sit around behind the tree and have lunch together and then let the people fend for themselves? But take a look at what happens. It says, Jesus then took the loaves, he gave thanks, and he distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to the disciples, gather the pieces that are left over, let nothing be wasted. And so they gathered them. And get this, guess how many baskets were left? You probably know the story. Remember, 12 followers, 12 friends, 12 disciples that doubted. It says they filled 12 baskets with pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those that had eaten. I mean, get this, 12. I mean, it's like Jesus was teaching them a lesson. He's like, hey, in case you were speculators, in case you were wondering if this thing can really happen, in case you were wondering if this is enough to stretch and actually meet the need that is there, it was a young boy that said, this is all I've got. You can have it if you want it. And they did the right thing. They said, hey, we're not just going to take it for ourselves. We're going to share with others. And in some miraculous way, these 5 loaves and 2 fish turned into feeding thousands, over 20,000 people, and there was still enough for 12 baskets for each disciple to take one home and say, look at what God has done. And here's the deal. So many times I believe that Jesus just says in these moments, he's like, keep it up. When you actually let God, keep it up, and you're going to see more of God. You're actually going to see God work in increased ways. I mean, he does this again in Luke chapter 9. He sends his 12 disciples out. He actually sends his followers out. He said, hey, I want you to go out and kind of scatter here and take a look at what he says to them. This is like the first amazing race. This is Amazing Race BC right here. He says, take nothing for the journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra tunic. Now, why would he say that to him? Why would he say, hey, I don't want you to take a bag of coins. You can't go home and get any extra clothes. You can't take a second tunic. Don't take your staff. Why would he say this? Because he's wanting to create in them a moment where they have to depend on him in order for them to go forward. You see, he's forcing his disciples to trust him. I believe that's what God is doing with us right now. At least he's bringing us, this journey is more than finances, it's more than money. It's about God shaping this community and trusting him that in order for us to go forward, we're going to have to say there's no backup plan. And we have to trust and say, God, in some miraculous way, you're going to come through. You know, in this place of trust, it's uncomfortable at times. I mean, it creates anxiety. I mean, it goes against everything that you've been taught about planning and proper alignment in your finances or in your decision-making processes. And it's not erratic decision-making, but it's faith-based decision-making. Again, Francis Chan in his book, he says something fascinating. He says, Christians today like to play it safe. As Chris said, I love his comment. He said, we didn't have a safe journey last year. This is called a crazy journey. We want to put ourselves in situations where we are safe, even if there is no God, but if we truly desire to please God, we cannot live that way. We have to do things that cost us during our life on earth, but will be more than worth it in eternity. And apparently, as of 6 p.m. last evening, you and I are still here. Some of you will get that later. And so, the sooner that you and I realize this, the better off we're going to be. You know, where do we need to trust? Where are we playing it safe? What in your life right now are you doing that requires faith, that requires God to actually show up? Or have you just made decisions where you have it all in control? As we wrap up, I want to do kind of an experience with this right here. I want you to kind of do something with me if you want, of course. We never make you do anything around here. I want you to, if you're willing, put your hands out like this. I want you to just hold your hands out like this. And I want this to kind of signify everything that you own. everything you have, everything God's blessed you with, because in reality, everything you have comes from God. He's the giver and taker of everything. Your paycheck, your stuff, your house, your kids, everything. And this right here, this should be our mental and spiritual posture with everything we have right here. Hands open, just holding it, gently holding it in our hands. You see, there's two things that can happen when we're in this physical, mental, and spiritual posture right here. When we're like this, God can either take it away as he pleases, or he can bring you more because you sit like this, because this is your posture. Now, clench your fists and pull them tight in like this. This right here is the mental and spiritual posture of nearly every American in our country. This is what's taught. This is what we've been grown to live by right here. Hey, it's mine. I'm not giving anything. I'm taking care of myself first. Whatever's left at the end, is whatever I can afford at the end, well, then maybe I'll give a little of the residue. God says, no, this is not the physical posture that shows me that you want to receive more. But this is the posture of our country right here. There's two things that can happen when we're like this. The first is this, that you're not going to get any more. I mean, when you're sitting like this, you are not ready to receive any more from God. And you might be saying, man, this is how I run my business right here. I keep a tight rein. I don't give any away. I don't bless people, and I'm making a lot. Well, you might be, but you're probably manipulating the system. You can manipulate the system, but let me assure you, you are not receiving blessings from God like this. The other thing that happens when we're like this is if we remember that everything comes from God and is God's, and we just get the chance to steward it, then God can freely give and receive as well as take when he pleases. And when he takes, when he begins to peel your hands off those things that you're holding so tight, it's painful. It hurts. In fact, some of us have been there. We've been in that place. We've been holding on to something tight, a relationship, a situation, maybe our money, and God has just began to painfully peel our hands back. That's what happens when we're like this. Back to this position right here, though. But when we're here like this, when we say our hands are open, God, I'm ready to freely give, I'm ready to freely receive. This is a heart that says, God, I recognize everything I have is yours, and I'm going to be freely generous with it, and I'm going to be ready to receive more. And here's the deal. I want this church to be in a place where we are ready, where we are ready, where God can heap more onto our laps because he says you're in the right position. I want that for this church. I want that for this community. Just imagine how many hearts, how many lives we could continue to touch and change if this is our spiritual posture right here. I'll tell you one more thing that would happen. God will be smiling. God is smiling as this is our position. And as a result, in a positive way, you're going to have the chance to say, I have ownership and being in a partnership with God, of blessing people, of being in a place where I can say, look at the lives that are being changed because I'm in an open posture of giving and receiving. So I want you just kind of sit like this. I want you just kind of sit and allow God to kind of just maybe say, meet you wherever you are as you listen to the words to these songs.